contrary to popular wishes, we're not all snowed out of the office. Instead, we're snowed into the office. That's why we're here recording a podcast against our wills. Still, Happy New Year!
Happy New Year!
Happy New Year!
This is episode 25 of the Tux Radar podcast. I'm Paul Hudson.
I'm Andrew Gregory.
I'm Mike Saunders.
And I'm Graham Morrison.
And in this podcast, we're talking Google phones, Apple tablets, and Mark Shuttleworth leaving Canonical. We're asking the big question that gets asked at this time of year every year. Is this the year of Linux on the desktop? And we look forward to Tux Radar Podcast Season 2. Don't forget, we publish news, features, and more on tuxradar.com, so bookmark it today. And our Coding Academy special magazine is on sale now. See the podcast notes for more information. If you're in the UK, it'll be on sale in most news stores tomorrow. And if you're in the US, on sale in most news stores this time next year. Keep a lookout and you'll find it soon, or just do the smart thing and buy it online.
It's time for the news, the first news of the decade.
Wow.
It's top of our list and is Google's Nexus One phone, the next-gen Android 2.1 device that was announced last night, UK time. I actually watched Chris DeBona's Twitter feed because there was nothing else to do, where he hypes up all its great new capabilities and how it's going to transform the mobile market by competing against Apple's iPhone.
And it's a great reveal. He was tweeting using the dictation, he said.
Yeah, he said he'd secretly been doing that before as well.
And well, voice recognition.
Yeah, that's possibly the best feature if it works. Right. Because any text input field you can dictate to.
That's strange. I thought it was possibly the worst feature because it'll make train journeys even more annoying. I'm on the train.
delete, train.
No, I'm on the... Well, it could be cool. It could be bad. I mean, Google Goggles, there's lots of... It could be good. It's still only single touch. There's no multi-touch, which is a bit of a deal breaker for me.
Is that a hardware limitation or is that to do with...
Yeah, I think so. They don't...
Well, I've said we'll consider it.
Well, that means somewhere in a secret room in Taiwan, they're desperately trying to create it.
Right.
It's the phone's manufactured by HTC.
HTC.
But unlike their normal bricks... The photographs look very thin, very nice, bright screen.
It's quite expensive, isn't it?
It's about it's something like $550 out of contract or $560, yeah. And then subsidized, it's going to be about...
Well, it's cheaper than the iPhone, isn't it?
Yeah.
iPhone's £550 unlocked.
But did I also read that storage is an issue? Even though it has 4 gig, correct. You can only use a couple of hundred...
That's Walt Mossberg's point. You only actually have about 140 megs. Of space.
That's insane.
190 megs exactly at 4.5 gigs.
I guess they want you to use the cloud.
Well, you say that, but the Android developers working so far are all aware of this problem, and basically you can't run programs from the flash card because you can stick more memory in there to store stuff, but you can't run apps from there. So there are two solutions. One of the ones they're using is just make your apps smaller.
No, include
less stuff, basically, which is a bit lame because some of the iPhones are big. Because it can be big.
Setlist must be bigger than 200 meg.
Sure, you've got graphics and other assets. Yeah, and the other one they use is download a really small app, which then downloads other stuff to the flash card because you can do that.
Right. So that's a bit like how Windows Mobile used to work.
Yeah, exactly. The binary runs from the phone, but the rest of it runs from the SD
card. Android takes up 3.8 gigs or something.
I have no idea.
It's ridiculous.
It is insane. When an iPhone is like 16 or 32 gig or 64 on the iTouch.
Yeah, but the operating system on the iPhone uses up about 300 megs. Yeah.
You've got to remember that Android runs Linux, so it's probably openoffice.org.
Java.
Yeah.
Java and support for Swahili.
There's probably a Tux Racer in the background.
I loved the Ars Technica hype, which was what Google announced today wasn't just the Nexus One, but the world's first carrier-independent smartphone store. Because, of course, in the US you can still only buy the iPhone in one carrier, whereas here you can buy it in like 4 carriers now.
No, you can't.
It's basically completely carrier-independent.
How's that the world's first then?
Well, because they're kind of saying you can buy it all online with a few clicks. You buy through Google and they redirect to the right site as opposed to just walking into an O2 store or an Orange store or a T-Mobile store like you would do in the UK. So yes, it's just because they've never been out of the US. That's why they're saying that.
Is that because of the snow?
Yeah, they probably haven't left their state. So
Is Google going to make a massive push with this phone on the consumer market, or is it still very much kind of, you know, if you like Google, you're a bit of a geek and a developer, or are they going for it like they're going with Chrome browser?
I think
now?
They've been going for the main business for a while. It's just they're trying to build it up until
right.
hopefully I think they imagine there's enough momentum that they'll eventually be competing with Apple
directly.
Yeah, right. That's the feeling I get.
Well, there are Chrome billboards now, aren't there?
Yeah, exactly. They're really pushing
big.
It. They're taking on Microsoft. Big
star. Yeah, I mean that double sheet on the Metro newspaper that you showed me. They're spending a fortune on it. Mm. The thing, I mean, I think it's important if it's open. I quite like the idea of Google's phone if it remains open, because one thing about the iPhone that does annoy me is blocking things like Google's Latitude application. You know, and that's what would make me likely to switch.
But the flip side, probably, if Apple releases Apple Latitude for Google Android, they'll say no.
Well, would they say no? I think it's vital that they keep things open and available.
Strangely and curiously, contrary to what you might imagine, the only open phone I've really seen so far is a Windows mobile phone. It's basically one massive flash storage device you just plug in.
Yeah, there's no gatekeeper.
Yeah, you can copy anything you want to it, run anything you like, doesn't really matter, doesn't care.
So you mount it as a flash drive and you can just poke around
copy across binaries you want to run, just run it,
just
runs.
Hex edit stuff if you wanted to.
They are the worst phones around nowadays, but they're completely open to hack.
Does anyone know the average life expectancy of one of these phones?
The Nexus.
Yeah.
The standard pleasure model.
Does the name Android finally make sense to you? should they call it Replicant? Right. it's all coming true. I don't know. I think very short, because if you think about it, they were going wild about the G1.
Mm. Yeah.
And then they were going wild about the Droid. And now they're going wild about the Nexus One. And this is 13 months since launch.
Since the G1, 13
major releases. That's 3 major releases. Sorry, that's pathetic. I don't want one of these, because the Osborne effect means that in 6 months' time, there's something else coming out to replace the current phone, which is more better stuff, and that's useless.
It does look like HTC's got the hardware right. I think. I mean, the other ones are quite bricky and like the old HTC.
Hardware right, yes, but they all have different resolutions there, don't they? All different screen resolutions and stuff. Which means your Google app you buy for your G1 may not work so well on your other one, because it's got a different resolution screen, different hardware. It might be fast, might be slow, might be too small, too big. I don't want apps like that.
Can't they get around that with the... Because it's got a decent CPU and pretty fast GPU, hasn't it? They can get around that with some hardware scaling and all that.
Yeah, but imagine making a game that's designed for exact resolution.
Yeah. You can't for the older devices if you...
You can't.
Even the new one,
can't. And maybe they'll stick. Maybe they'll say, listen, the new Google standard is 8x400. 4840, sorry. As a resolution, that'd be great, but they probably won't.
Okay, so the next news story we've got is Freescale, who are a semiconductor manufacturer. They've announced they're going to announce at the CES show, which I think starts tomorrow, a Linux tablet device. Nobody knows much about it. It's supposed to be about between phone size and netbook size.
There have been pictures of it already, pictures of them leaked, and they're it's this 1 gigahertz CPU. Looking at, I think it's got about a 7-inch screen, and it's in multiple colours.
Oh, that's nice. Cheap, $200.
That's what they're looking at. Yeah, that's what they're proposing.
Instant on
runs Android or Linux. They say
day long battery life. They say too
day long.
Yeah,
that's. I don't know. I mean, obviously now is the time to get that kind of thing to market.
No, I think now's not the time to get things to market.
Before the ice late.
The reason we're talking about it at CES is that the iTablet, or iSlate, whatever they call it, is supposedly rumoured to be announced in about 3 weeks. So everyone's rushing now to make it look like they thought of it first.
Mm.
But I'd be amazed if Apple just comes out with a large iPhone OS device. I think they're going to bring out something actually revolutionary in this device.
Yeah, I think they will, but...
Something innovative. And that'll make all this Freescale thing look... It's just a flat screen with some screen...
But they're sitting on this technology. They've got to do something with it.
Just because Apple comes out with a better device. In 4 weeks, they could release more of this vaporware, except now saying, hey, it's got all things Apple's one's got too, just with the cheaper.
No, they want to get in people's mindset. This is the competitor to Apple's iTablet, you know.
Yeah.
This is what the other people buy.
Worldwide brand Freescale.
Well, you know, it's
think different.
You know, there are lots of people happy with their other phones other than iPhones, you know. even though they're possibly inferior.
Well, I'm intrigued by this this Freescale device because it actually looks like the first sensible tablet in that it's quite thin. It's something you could hold in your hand and browse the internet with, whereas I was looking at other tablets, and some of them have, like, Ethernet jacks on. Stuff like that. You do not
VGA
want
ports.
VGA ports. They're going to be parallel ports. They're absolutely ridiculous, and they're about 3 inches thick, but this looks like a kind of, you know, handheld web browsing computer, which would suit, could be useful for a lot of people, but, you know, like you say, it's still technically vaporware at this stage.
The pads from Star Trek, basically, is what you're
after. Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
And but they're doing it for they're proposing it for $200, whereas Apple, some people are suggesting Apple may launch their Isolate at, you know, $1,000. Yes. So.
Well, I'm sure they will.
And people will still buy it.
People will still buy it.
I will still buy it.
It'll have a lovely brushed aluminium case.
Yeah. Old device bad, new device good.
Yeah.
Okay, and the final story... unlike in our introduction, Shuttleworth hasn't left Canonical. He's going to step down as the CEO in March.
Oh, no.
Sorry, Mark.
He announced it on his blog on the 17th of December. And Jane Silber, who's currently the COO, will be taking over as CEO in March.
Hang on, chief executive
who becomes something? PO.
Really, I don't know.
They're just sounds. Yeah. They're just noise.
Sounds like Jane Silber does all the work. So
recompiling the choosing the colours.
So she's taking over as the head.
Is he still going to be a benevolent dictator for life then?
He said
he never was he was never BDFL of Canonical. He was BDFL of Ubuntu.
Mm. Things. But is he going to maintain that role?
He said, "I'm more committed now more than I have ever been to Ubuntu."
Oh, great.
So, I don't know, he said, "I want to focus my Canonical energy on product design, partnerships and customers. Those are the areas I enjoy most and also the areas where I can be..." I can't read my own handwriting. "I can best..."
Hi, Redmond.
"I can best shape the impact we have on open source." So, it sounds like, I mean, my first thought was that, you know, he's a bit bored of it all now and wants to move on to something else, you know, like spaceships.
and no geek likes doing business stuff, do they?
No.
Spreadsheets
and board like meetings.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Like that,
you
know? But it doesn't sound like that. It sounds more like Steve Jobs being more hands-on with the Isolate. You know, maybe he wants to personally, you know, look after how Ubuntu has developed. Because he specifically mentions things like laptops, netbooks and desktops. And I think he's always been interested in usability. So I think it's probably a good thing.
Yeah, he's a smart man.
And he is.
Innovative thinker in that space. So.
Presumably, if we look at canonical.co.uk/jobs, there'll be some cool new positions open.
Hey, that's not a bad idea.
Well, there's a COO for a start, isn't there?
Yeah.
She's now a CEO.
Yeah, so it's a pity because Mark is a useful figurehead, I think, for the Linux community. He's widely recognised and he's, you know, you can print pictures of him in space next to articles on the BBC, so we'll possibly lose that. But, you know, maybe it marks a turning point in seriousness for Canonical.
Has Jane Silber been into space?
No, but she has big business, big enterprise experience, apparently, so...
Which is similar, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, it probably is.
So if you're a governor of Alaska, you're near Russia. I think it's a bad thing, deep down, because I don't think Canonical is a good enough place for him to leave just yet.
Right.
He's not left.
Stepped down as CEO. So what is he doing, Canonical now?
He's got a different job.
What's he doing Canonical?
I don't know.
Exactly, he's left. Until we hear different, he's left. I don't think they're profitable, quite frankly. In fact, I would be amazed if they were profitable.
They haven't needed to be, have they? Because Shuttleworth put £10 million into this.
Isn't that much?
No.
Think of the dot-com boom. £10 million was about a week back then.
Well, true.
After you buy your posh Aeron shares and stuff. There's no money left. And they do have that very expensive building and a lot of staff.
Well, maybe this is the idea. Maybe Mark thought, you know, I don't have the passion for running this business ruthlessly enough to make money, so I'll go on to be the, you know, get back to my geek roots, whereas Jane can be all managerial.
What did Gates call it? Chief architect? He did that.
Yeah, yeah, he did.
Oh, yeah. Maybe Shuttleworth do some of those adverts.
Oh,
yeah, with Seinfeld. That'd be cool.
But with the British equivalent.
So
if they're not profitable, then it might be a bit dangerous.
But that might be the idea, you know, that might be...
Well, he thinks he's not going to make it profitable, so...
Well, you know, he had one good business venture, and by his own admission, got quite lucky to be able to sell his work for that amount of money, so, yeah.
Well, if Jane, you want a new COO, you can volunteer any of us. We'll do it.
Yeah, we'll do it. We'll do it as a team operation.
Totally.
As it's the last podcast in our season, we are going out of order because we can. And it's our open ballot. Cleverly not really open because we haven't told you the question. And we haven't told you the question because we think we know what you'd say. This time the question is this the year of Linux on the desktop?
What a question. Yeah, what a question.
It took quite a while to think this one up.
Yeah. I don't think it's ever been discussed before anywhere on the internet.
So for the first time ever, we bring you the answer to the question, is this the year? Who would like to go first? Andrew, looking excited.
This is a year of Linux on the desktop.
Wow.
Because I've been using Linux on the desktop for ages.
That's deep.
Yeah.
Whoa.
What do you use it for? Playing DVDs?
No, I don't use it for playing DVDs. I use my DVD player for playing DVDs because that's connected to the telly.
Ah. Listening to MP3s?
Yeah.
Watching Flash movies?
Yeah.
Anything else?
Looking on the internet.
Internet, eh?
I'm playing that Chromium shoot 'em up that I installed when I was playing
Flex. Oh, that's a great game.
Suddenly very popular.
Yeah, so there. It just works, you know.
So it's a year because you've been using it already.
Yeah.
For how many years?
For, I don't know, 4 years now? 5 years?
Oh.
But does the question...
I've been using it decades ago. Life of Brian Stiley.
Does the question refer to getting a certain critical mass?
Yes,
I guess?
It does.
So,
let's hear your critical interpretation of the question first.
Is this the year of Linux on the desktop?
Yeah, so he says no, that's the wrong question. It's a year of the desktop. It's
yeah, that's not answering the question, is it?
No.
The public aren't interested in that question.
The real issue is...
in real terms, this has been the year of Linux on the desktop for many years.
There's been a 0% rise in Linux on the desktop this year.
And I would like to say that the Labour government is going to fight tooth and nail to win the next election.
Everything in our power.
So, Graham, then?
Is this the year of Linux on the desktop? No, I think it'll be very much like last year. And in fact, I think things are getting worse for Linux on the desktop because...
Bum, bum, bum.
You know, this was an important question 5 years ago when everybody thought, you know, we were just at the tipping point where we could push over all the dominoes in the room and create a world record of Linux getting given to everybody's homes, which it has done. But I don't think there's ever going to be a tipping point. I think it's just going well. But it's an irrelevant question. Despite the fact it was my idea.
So moo then. Mike, what do you think?
When's Chrome OS launching?
This year.
Right, there we go then. This will be it.
Don't you think it'll be a bit of a damp squib like Android 2.1 on the Nexus?
No, because you have to go out and buy the phone to get Android 2.1.
Well, you do with Chrome OS.
Well, I guess it depends. If they're going to tie it down that much...
Well, it won't be the same experience if you stick it on your EPC.
Stick it on a generic PC.
It won't work on an EPC.
I've thought of another answer.
Whoa! Two answers for the price of one.
Yeah.
All those adverts on the telly for Windows 7.
Yeah.
I'm a PC. I've thought of this idea.
All right.
A lot of those are in Linux already, and I've been in Linux for ages. So it kind of is the year of Linux on the desktop. In terms of cool ideas taken from Linux and added to Windows 7.
I see what you mean. Borrowing.
Borrowing. Standing on the shoulders of giants.
Yeah, that's innovation.
Yeah, so open source innovations are getting out there, just not on open platforms.
They're being taken and closed.
Well, yeah, but then...
It's not very cheery, is it?
It kind of... No, but if people are doing really clever things and then... and people are benefiting from them already from Windows. Hang on. Let me go away and think about this a bit more clearly.
I think that Chrome OS, the Chrome laptop, netbook thing, they're going to launch it, isn't going to take off this year, Mike, I'm afraid. I think it's going to be next year because of this iterative process Google seems to have of getting it wrong the first few times and then finally getting it right.
Well, true, but I'm just thinking the way they're pushing the Google browser at the moment, in 6 months' time, you know, Google, the Chrome browser's market share could be a lot higher because, you know, everybody will have heard of it by then.
Yeah, it will be higher. I think it's going to do very, very well. Mm. But it's different with the laptop. People have to change the whole OS to something different.
Yeah.
And that's a bit scary for them.
It's interesting, actually, that does that really qualify as Linux on the desktop? I know it's Chrome OS and it's running Linux, but
WebOS is Linux, isn't it, for Palm Pre?
Yeah, yeah.
And Android is Linux for the Palm Pre.
But we're very much now talking about the kernel, really.
Yeah, we are, yeah.
Whereas I always kind of imagine this question was about GNOME or KDE.
Right. Yes. I think the year that GNOME finally gets market dominance on the Linux desktop is the year that Linux becomes a serious platform for the mainstream. Yeah. It will look and work the same if everybody turns it on. And I think that's really quite important. Otherwise, people are saying, well, I'm running XFCE 4.3. And it's really old and broken and stuff. And or KDE 4.4. And it's too new and too broken. And it never looks the same, never works the same when there's no standardization. So we're just so fragmented right now that finally the year that KDE basically dies or gives up the ghost and GNOME takes over will be the year that it takes off. Bring on, Flamers.
A lot of people would agree with that. A lot of people have been saying that for a long time. The big issue holding Linux back is the lack of KDE. But other things as well, different configuration tools. You
package
know,
managers.
Different package managers. More consistency equals...
Have we mentioned this before?
Choice is good, yeah.
Choice is good.
We've got more wrinkles on our faces. Every podcast.
A few more grey eyebrow hairs.
Yeah.
If it is the year of Linux on the desktop, I'll be very surprised, because not enough has changed. Although I do really, really like GNOME Shell, I think.
Is GNOME 3 due to launch this year?
It is due to launch this year. And you know, if any of the guys who even contributed slightly to GNOME Shell listening to this, guys, you're awesome. It's such wonderful work. Congratulations on being great.
GNOME Shell doesn't sound like something that will make the breakthrough to mass appeal, though.
Well, you know, it's not something you sort of know about. It's the desktop. The new GNOME desktop style is very, very nice. They've done some actually really good work in not doing what KDE did and tearing it all out and replacing it, but just taking what you've got and just modifying it a little bit to add new features and stuff. And it makes a big difference, and it works really well. And it works first time, too. They're so far ahead, and only a few months' work from what I can tell. It's amazing. You've got to, if you're listening to this podcast and haven't tried GNOME Shell and you're a GNOME user, go and try GNOME Shell. It's an Ubuntu 9.10 apt-get GNOME Shell, and it's incredible. GNOME-shell. So if that is the future, then we're in safe hands, I think. GNOME 3 could be a kick-ass release.
I'm surprised nobody said yet Linux will take off on the desktop when Pulse Audio dies. I think that would be the...
Oh, what's the other one? Oh, Brain Party. Yeah, Brain Party is the best way to run Linux on your machine. So buy Brain Party now.
For your iPhone?
Yes.
Yeah, oh, wow. The thing is, we can't even dare to dream about Pulse Audio dying.
No.
We'd like to, but it would just get our expectations, hopes up soon, and we'd do terrible. Yeah. Damn you, Pulse Audio.
We don't want Pulse Audio to die. We just want somebody to actually give it a bit of an overhaul. And
I want it to die.
No, I want it to die.
I just want
it
a single slider.
It caused enough pain, I want it to die.
I want the FreeBSD system where any application can just open DevDSP and FreeBSD kernel works it out. Don't want any demons running.
I think
we
might have mentioned that before as well.
Sorry, everybody.
That's how important it is.
No, you're right. Okay.
And with that agreement, we come to the halfway point of our podcast. Still to come, the discovery of the week and our hot topic.
All right, discovery of the week. And in a massive innovation, I'm going to start.
Excellent.
I've been using Google Chrome as the browser, as regular listeners will know. And I found something rather cool yesterday.
The Chromium BSG? Did you install it back as well?
Yeah, it's actually an Easter egg in the browser. Now, if you right-click on the title bar in Chrome, you can open up a task manager so you can close individual tabs because they're all process-separated. But you get this list in this task manager. It shows you what CPU is being used and what memory. If you right-click, you can add a new column to that, and it's called Goats Teleported.
Goatsy Teleported?
No, just Goats Teleported. And... It seems to be a number, a large number that just climbs and climbs and climbs. And this has been the source of various investigations on the internet. People looked up, somebody's even set up a whole website about it. But of course, you can look into the source code for the browser and see what it's doing. And all it appears to do is just increment this integer by random numbers every few ticks. So you've got this number
really
zooming up of goats teleported. And somebody's even submitted a bug report about the browser saying there have been too many goats teleported in my browser.
Is it has Jeff Minter, you know, submitted a patch? Is that what it's all about?
Maybe that's it.
It reminds me so much of SimCity 2000, where every public monument had some random number associated with it, like number of llamas congregating around this statue. Yeah.
it's one of those great little Google quirks. But, you know, maybe it'll turn into...
Or it's sinister.
Or maybe it's massively sinister.
Number of souls.
Number of key presses logged that are sending to Google Central servers. So that's mine. Graham?
That's a very good one, and mine isn't very good because I, you know, over the last couple of weeks, I've barely turned on a computer.
Really?
But what? I did get out on my bike.
Cool.
And so mine is opencyclemap.org, which is based on open maps. It's the same data, brilliant geographical data for lots of part of the world, but in the UK particularly, the community have gone to a great deal of trouble to actually put cycle routes on the map.
Oh, yeah.
And the cross-country routes on road routes, and lots of people adding their own routes. And if you enjoy cycling, bit of mountain biking, it's very good and it's free.
So can anybody add routes?
Anybody can add.
Then this is a source of fantastic trolling. The first thing I was thinking on the internet is trolling.
It's like cycling, isn't it?
You could lead people, you know, down to just off the edge of into ravines and
just
things.
Just like it's based on OpenStreetMap.
Right.
You can use the same data.
No, I wouldn't trust
it. But you know, there's a real lack of other people's routes and things like that. There's lots of official routes in this country, and it's got all of those. But great information, you know, there's really good geographical information on inclines and declines and fields and hills. So thanks, guys, for doing that. It's all Creative Commons. Bike routes are expensive when you try and buy them.
Really? But now they respect your freedom.
Yeah.
Paul, how many have you got?
I've got one.
Hey, what happened?
It's this awesome programming language called C#.
No, I'll never take off.
No. Recently, for some insane reason, some of the developers have been talking about extending C# with custom extensions, which is wacky because it breaks compatibility with Microsoft. I think it breaks it full stop, as in programs compiled with this will actually not work, no longer run on Windows without the mono.
Oh, right, it's not even an option.
Yeah. You flick it, have to turn it, enable it on to use the extensions. But so, for example, Miguel de Casa created a diff to add tuples, like in Python, where you can say foobar baz equals some function, and that function returns three values into that tuple. You can just read them out, which is quite cool. And he's also added string interpolation, like PHP. So you can have a string with C# variables inside, and it just figures them out and interpolates them. And he's given crazy examples where you can actually basically execute almost any C# code inside the interpolation if you want to, which is much cleaner than the current way of doing it. So it makes Mono a better language than the original Microsoft C#.
So embrace and extend.
It is embrace and extend, but it's working on our side, and that's awesome for a change.
Right.
It seems to be the same sort of idea that Vala's having, saying, how can we take C#, a great language, and modify it to suit our needs better?
Mm-hmm.
So it's great.
So, yeah, hopefully this should silence a few of the naysayers who always say, oh, you're just chasing Microsoft all the time. And
it won't.
It won't. I like to hope. Saving the best, or possibly the worst till last, it's Andrew.
Like Graham, I've not looked at a computer in the past million years, so I've forgotten how they work and things.
The worst, then.
Yeah. But I did find something really cool in the Christmas edition of The Spectator, which I've sadly forgotten to bring with me, so I can paraphrase it only vaguely. But one of the writers in there said that judging the value of downloaded music by the amount of money that's spent on it is like trying to evaluate the value of sex by only looking at the money spent on prostitution, because there is an unmeasured value.
You wouldn't download
not
a
to car. The music industry though.
Well, just the music industry, because it acts as free promotions. You download something for free, then you're going to pay to see them in concert, or you pay for the vinyl or something.
Well, you know, I agree with you, but lots of people.
But it was this article was about, you know, Lord Mandelson and Lord Geffen
and Bono
and Baron Bono,
yeah.
and all of these people, and it just was
having their livelihoods taken away from them.
It was really refreshing to see, you know, ostensibly a right wing conservative magazine come out with this new way of looking at things. New for them, I assume.
It's compassionate conservatism.
It was really nice, and I wish I could have it word for word, but I've thrown it away.
Oh, well.
I think I've found my second discovery of the fortnight. Andrew reads Spectator.
Or one of his parents reads The Spectator.
And didn't you
was back home for Christmas?
No, Andrew, I read Spectator.
Did you apply to work on The Spectator once?
I did,
or something?
Yeah.
didn't you get a letter from Boris Johnson? Or?
I did get a letter from Boris Johnson.
Excellent.
But I left it on the top of a bus.
Oh no! Actually, on top of a bus.
No, on the. I left it on the top floor of the 88 to Moor End.
So if anybody's on the 88 to Moor End and sees a letter from Boris Johnson, yeah, you know where to send it.
Like a chocolate bar filled with lovely hazelnuts and caramel, it's time for Hot Topic. So, this is episode 25 of the podcast. We do them every 2 weeks, which means that we've almost done a year.
Hooray!
1 year.
To celebrate this fact, we're going to have next fortnight off.
Hooray!
Hooray! Hooray!
Yes!
When we go away and work really hard...
Oh. Oh, well.
...on redesigning the podcast.
Wow.
So we're going to give it new...
Season 2 colours.
New stuff, new colours, a new font.
New font.
New hat for all of us.
Yeah. And all sorts of new stuff. So, Graham, as chief architect.
No.
As benevolent podcast dictator for life.
Are you going to stop using Windows Sound Recorder to do these podcasts?
Are you going to put it through Audacity?
I don't know. I think we should. Do you think we should change the music?
Yeah.
Maybe people could send us links to some Creative Commons music.
Oh yeah. If it's season 2, we have to change the music.
Yeah. So totally. Maybe that's an idea. You know, people send us links to some Creative Commons stuff they like.
So what was our license? It's CC share alike, isn't it?
Yes, I think so.
So it has to be commercial use allowed. Non-commercial, obviously, is irrelevant. So it has to be commercial use allowed. That's a good idea. Yeah. So CCSA, isn't it really?
Yeah.
Even,
and what should we do? Should we judge it,
too, or
should we
just say?
Should we judge it, or should we let people vote for it?
Whoa, we'll judge it.
Well, yeah.
We don't want Rage Against the Machine. Yeah.
If you have some CC by SA music ideas, put them in the podcast comments, and Graham will judge them.
Rage Against the Machine isn't Creative Commons.
No, that's
very a shame.
That's my first idea.
That's a great idea,
Graham. That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Hooray. I'd quite like to see some more Brad Sucks music. I like Brad Sucks.
I like it. Actually, I like it. It's just, I suppose, you know, when we change other things, it's nice to... I mean, it could be some other Brad Sucks music.
We could get Brad to play it in a different key, perhaps.
Yeah.
Maybe we could have different bits of music for each section.
I think we could get Brad to play it as normal and then introduce a key change halfway through.
Whoa.
And then, like, glitter will fall down from the ceiling and we can all get up out of our chairs and walk towards the microphones with a fan blowing our shirts back.
Yeah, we could do it like the X Factor, couldn't we? You could be Simon Cowell.
Yes.
Yes, that sounds like a good idea.
Has anyone actually had any ideas at all?
No, I don't. I would like to ditch some of these sections, because we always have news, Scary of the Week, Hot Topic, and Open Ballot, right? And then...
And we have that stupid thing that Mike does at the end.
What's that called? One more
Tetris
ballot.
Something.
I did think we could have custard pies for that section.
Really?
You know, when you ask your question at the very end, we could have custard pies to the losers.
Can we have more sound effects?
You know, like...
Sound effects.
Yeah. Maybe we need sound effects devices so that we could just use them spontaneously rather than having to edit them in later.
Like Mike's Tamagotchi thing.
Yeah, because your tune sounded quite good. Sorry.
I think sounds are better when they're edited in later.
Sorry, Greg.
I know it's more work for you.
I want Mike to feel ashamed when I press my Mike is Wrong sound effect. On the spot, actually, rather than later.
Have you actually written an app to do that?
I could do, yeah. Really, Mike is Wrong.
Release it on the App Store, see how many people download it. Become a meme.
I'd like to see our challenges becoming a section, permanently.
We've done some challenges, we kind of forget about
them. Oh, yeah, that's a good idea.
If every podcast had a new challenge. Does that be big ones, you know? Just switch to Thunderbird for a week's a challenge, quite frankly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
A big challenge.
But surely after a week of Bing, we've beaten the best that the internet can throw at us.
Well, no, there is the whole let's not use the command line for 2 weeks, but we're too afraid to do that.
Let's not use the command line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God, what would he do?
Yeah, exactly.
Don't know.
Cry.
Stare at Nautilus going,
help. How do you delete files?
Beats me.
So yes, that we could make them ditch, say, Hot Topic, and then make our challenge regular.
I think Hot Topic and Open Ballot, there's so much overlap between them. It's us discussing stuff, and often with readers involved as well. So I'm sure we could.
I like Open Ballot.
When it's open.
When it's
open. when
it's a ballot.
And when it's a ballot. And when
there
we
aren't
ask...
enough open ballot questions, are there?
No, they always boil down to similar kind of few subjects. Yeah. Should we have more choice or should we just get on with it?
Well, people could suggest things that we use for the open ballot. If we get enough suggestions, we could include one.
But so, right. That's an idea. Let us know.
No one will suggest anything sensible. That's the trouble.
How about interviews?
Well, like on the phone.
Would you like to hear interviews, listeners? Yeah, over the phone. Can we do phone interviews? If I hold my phone really close up to the microphone.
Yeah, it's technically feasible,
oh,
I think.
Hang on, we've got loads of interviews from OzCon and stuff, so we could we like introduce...
Or just play them back
like,
over the...
Like 2 minutes of interview.
That's a bit tedious, isn't it? I'd rather do it on the air.
Well...
Live.
Live.
Surely it won't be tedious if Graham's edited them all together.
The only problem with that is that it requires some planning.
It does, yeah.
Which is something the four of us are particularly bad at.
Yeah, but fortunately, as the podcast lead engineer, it would fall on your shoulders. I think interviews are a great idea.
I think they're a terrible idea.
See, this is a bit of trivia for you listeners. We used to record the podcast about 2 days in advance and then play them back as we needed. And now it was down to 1 day. And nowadays we just do it on the day and hope it gets done in time. And Greg usually finishes about sort of 8 p.m. in the evening, 9 p.m. in the evening if it's online.
I don't remember when we ever did it in advance.
The first few times we did it in advance. That's why it launched on the day of the site, if you remember.
Yeah.
We were doing so well.
A couple of times, yeah, we have done it.
And now it's fallen to bits. So you're right, planning will be difficult. But if you did it in advance, we could sort of do a phone call the day before. And
We have done one interview before, of course, Mark Shuttleworth back in...
Oh, yeah.
...sometime. That was 904.
That required effort, didn't it?
It did.
You had to go to his office and find him and stuff.
We had to, like, get past the sharks with laser beams on their heads.
Yeah.
And go all the way to London.
London. Big scary city.
Also, Mark's yesterday's news now, you know.
Jane Silver.
Yeah.
I think phone interviews. We could round up people.
Can we have a phone interview with that lefty bloke who keeps annoying people?
I've actually spoken to him before. He's a funny kind of guy. I think
you heard
I,
it
might,
here
I
first.
Might even actually have. A, yeah, I'll delete that.
I
recorded it. I might have it somewhere. I wonder what I talked about. I can't remember. It was a couple of years ago, but I met him and asked if I could speak to him. And
right.
I wonder what he talked about. I wonder if he said anything interesting. I can't remember it, which is why I've never mentioned it.
Interviews then?
Yeah, I was listening to a BSD podcast recently, BSD Talk or something, and they had a phone interview just with this guy who sold BSD computers, but, you know, he was a cheerful chap and had some stuff to say, so...
Graham, how do we do it technologically?
I don't know. I'd have to think about it. Logistically, I mean...
We'll have to get a very, very long string and another can.
Yeah.
Yeah. We could do it.
Listeners, let us know what you think of our awesome ideas. Do you have any ideas, Andrew? Ever?
Crunchy on the outside.
That's a no then. Listeners, let us know, and we'll ignore your ideas and come up with new ideas that are better.
Yeah, leave it to the very last minute and make the next one episode 26.
Now we'll just interview Graham Morrison.
So, Graham.
Album then.
Yes. I've just thought of another discovery, but I'll hold on to it for the next podcast.
But it might not exist.
It might not exist next time. Yeah. Give it
discovery of the week may have been destroyed. So.
Oh no! I need to. Rather than half remembering stuff, I think I should like write stuff down in advance next time.
Is it some obscure quote from a 19th century novel?
It's from that geek feminism site that I found so amusing.
another chance for Flamers to dive in and burn us to a crisp.
girlswithguns.org.
And with that flame bait, we come to the end of our last of the episode of the first
hang on
season.
I've just thought of something.
Yes,
it's the new year, right? Yes. Why don't you have a new year's resolution to remember to give me my one last thing if it survives into the next season?
It survives.
Come on,
so exciting. It's like reality radio.
exactly. We don't know what's going to happen. There's a New Year's resolution for you.
I'll think about it. It may not exist. I won't make the resolution just yet, but I'll let you get away with it this one more time.
Well, that's good. I was looking back over some of the earlier podcasts back in the days, and of course I remember singing a bit of the Free Software song.
That was a highlight.
That was pretty much all that I remember. But I was just thinking, how many of you guys actually know the lyrics, the full lyrics of the Free Software song, given that you call yourself hackers?
I know them all.
Put down that phone. Come on, then. Come on.
How about one line each? Join us now and share software. You'll be free hackers.
They say there's a secret chord.
Everybody knows, join us now and share the software. You'll be free hackers. You'll be free. But then
the next bit, this is the sound of me picking my foot. Putting something in my mouth.
Is the next verse about Marshall Wade killing the Scots?
Don't think so, unless I've got the wrong version here.
Is that a seventh verse?
There are only two other verses after this, of four lines each. Come on, hoarders.
Is one only sung at Christmas time?
Anybody going to guess?
Hoarders?
Hoarders.
Hoarders, Reavers, Raiders 3. Come and join the party.
Nobody knows, do they?
I got one line right, so I turned to get a line right.
You got the easiest line right.
Hoarders may get hoarders
money
may get
and goods and material things and all the women
houses.
And all the women and jobs and girlfriends.
Though cowards flinch and traitors sneer, you'll see the penguin flying here.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant.
As if our messes have anything to do with penguins, though. Oh. Gnu herd heads or something. Well, clearly nobody knows, so...
No one knows. One actually cares.
Never mind, but I'm not even going to bother reading it out. The link is there in the podcast notes.
Yeah, Graham, get to it.
Yeah.
And with that mass confusion, we come to the end of our season one. I hope you've had some highlights and as much of a great time as we've had over here at Tux Radar HQ. Don't forget, all the notes for this podcast are on the website. And that is it for season one. We'll see you in 4 weeks.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.